Are you tired of selling a kidney for a laptop? Do you need to take notes in your family WhatsApp group without your boss thinking you're not working? Tired of explaining something when you could just draw it and share it? How about that backend? Is it heavy laptop related? Let the Mesa Fundi come to your rescue. Hashtag freedom with Fundi. Attach Microsoft Office for the ultimate experience. Make the shift and upgrade to the Mesa Fundi with Windows 10 Professional. The Mesa Fundi, flexibility reimagined. Available online and in store at all leading retailers. Mesa recommends Windows 10 Professional.
What's going on? I can't travel to Durban and I really need to see the team. Our telephone bill is through the roof, our server crashed and we've lost all our files.
Are you getting frustrated with problems in your business? Win at work and calm the chaos with Vox's intelligent business solutions. Work smarter, not harder, and connect your business to the world from 899 Rand. T's and C's apply. Visit vox.co.za for more information.
I'm Duncan McLeod and this is Tech Central. I'm joined now by Mark Sternberg, MD of Spark ATM Systems, which has some interesting insights into how the lockdown is affecting the economy. And Tech Central is also partnering with Spark to produce regular updates as the lockdown is eased. Mark, it's great to have you here. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Duncan. Thanks for having me on the show.
Pleasure. Tell me a bit about Spark ATM Systems. I see you guys were acquired by a NASDAQ-listed company called Cardtronics back in 2017. You also operate about 4,500 ATM installations around the country?
Absolutely, Duncan. Yeah, so we've been operating in South Africa for about 15 years, and this is our 15-year anniversary. We actually had a few fantastic 15-year parties planned for this year until the small matter of Corona arrived a few months ago, but hopefully we'll still have a chance to have a few celebratory drinks later this year. Absolutely, we're in the ATM business. We deploy ATMs on behalf of 8 financial institutions in South Africa, into retail, petroleum, convenience, gaming, hospitality locations countrywide. And as you said correctly, we've got about 4,500 ATMs in the market across the breadth of South Africa. And yes, Cardtronics is our holding company. They're a US listed $1.5 billion company operational in 11 countries globally. And they own and operate over 200,000 ATMs. They're the biggest ATM operator globally. So it's been a really interesting journey building the company, and the last few years being part of a global group. And certainly none more interesting than the last few weeks in South Africa. And looking at what's been happening in the ATM market and how it's, you know, how our ATMs are reflective of what's going on in the economy.
So explain to me how the ATM market works in South Africa. I know there are independent ATM operators such as yourselves. The banks obviously right. deploy their own ATMs. Do you work exclusively with licensed financial institutions to deploy ATMs, or are you permitted as an independent provider of ATMs to deploy your own infrastructure and then service clients directly?
So it's the latter, not the former. So we, in every instance, partner with a bank. In terms of the regulations in South Africa, we partner with a sponsor bank. And effectively, in terms of the regulations, we would then deploy an ATM on behalf of that particular bank, be it a Capitec bank, Absa, Standard, Nedbank, or FNB, who are the 5 big ATM deployers in the market, comprising collectively kind of over 90% of the ATMs in South Africa. Just over 30,000 ATMs in South Africa, of which we own and operate about 4,500, exclusively in retail petroleum locations. We also do a few bank branches. And you're right, banks typically used to deploy their own ATMs into the market. More and more they're partnering with the likes of Spark ATM to deploy ATMs on their behalf. We offer the full end-to-end ATM offering, from site selection to ATM commissioning to installation, through all the way to servicing and monitoring the equipment. So the ATMs would look and feel exactly like a bank branded ATM to the man on the street. The same fees apply. If we deploy a bank X's ATM, then that customer, then that bank's customer would pay those fees at that ATM. Mm-hmm. Other customers typically would pay a slightly additional kind of you know, SaaS switch fee to use the machine. And so it goes, and we continue to deploy ATMs, and the market continues to grow, really, in certain segments.
Yeah. So is there a particular LSM that you service, or is it across the market?
It is across the market. I think the majority of our installations are non-metro installations. More and more we're deploying ATMs into kind of rural, peri-rural locations, where ATMs are still underserviced, and the ratio of ATMs per capita when you get out of the main metros in South Africa remains kind of fairly low and quite challenging, particularly across peak days, month ends, and your SASSA period, where we along with all the banks, challenge to keep the ATMs loaded and stocked, because the demand is really, really high and the supply of ATMs quite low. So yeah, we deploy ATMs across the breadth of the country.
I know it's a little bit off topic from what we're discussing today, but I had an interesting chat. I had an interesting chat with Shamil Joseph, the CEO of Vodacom Group, yesterday, and he was talking about the impact of load shedding, and they're going to be spending R1 billion this financial year installing generators and battery backup systems, etc., to keep their network going when the anticipated load shedding returns when this lockdown is over. Are you guys able to mitigate against load shedding at all, or do your systems simply go offline when the power's off?
So it's also been a challenge to us. Fortunately, the last few months, this COVID period has been a period of no load shedding, and hopefully Eskom will have taken the gap, as we all hope, to improve their scheduled maintenance and unscheduled maintenance, and get load shedding behind all of us. But we have no illusions that it's a challenge going forward. We dealt with it in many different ways. So certain locations where we install an ATM inside a store, a large super spa, a large shopping center, a pick and pay, etc., would already have generators and backup power. Other locations, and we could piggyback off that perhaps, the ATMs actually use quite low electricity supplies, so they generally are quite light on demand. In many other locations, we had to go and invest in backup battery power, UPSs and the like, just to keep the machines trading through the lockdown, the load shedding period. It was an expense for us, and hopefully we'll see the back of that suit.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Mark, take us through some of the numbers then. You obviously have some interesting insights to share on the impact of the lockdown on people's spending behavior and how much cash they deposit and withdraw at your facilities. Maybe just take us through what sort of data you're able to glean from your ATM network, and then from that, what you've seen running up to the implementation of the lockdown, and then through lockdown level 5 and now into level 4.
Super. Yeah, Duncan. So, the virus and the impact on the economy has kind of moved so quickly over the last 2 months. It feels like years, but it really has been 2 months since we went into this, going 2 months, kind of early, middle of March, when our first cases were identified, and we went into a state of emergency, if you will, and then into the first lockdown on the 26th of March. It's moved so quickly. And I think there is, if you look at other crises, 2008, it kind of took a long period of time for the impact into the economy to, and the information and the impact to feed into the systems, and for people to report it, and companies and governments to report on it. This has moved so quickly that we're all scratching and scrambling for some real time data as to what the impact has been. And if you look at the analysts and you look at the economists, and I certainly am not pretending to be either today, I'm a humble ATM salesman, really. But if you look at the data, everyone is scratching for this real-time economic and mobility data. Apple and Google, you'll be familiar, they launched these fantastic mobility reports, which showed how people have responded in terms of their behavior, the impact on various sectors, be it retail, petroleum, pharmacy, how those have kind of, dropped, how people are spending more time at home and kind of, more time in certain places, obviously leisure and hospitality going through the floor. You're looking at data coming out of China now as to real-time data on train activity and air activity and as some type of a leading indicator as to what we can expect, given the fact that we're, kind of 8 to 15 weeks or so down the line from their lockdown, which happened earlier this year. So the beauty about our ATMs is there are 4,500 odd ATMs that we own and operate around the country, and they really are they really take the pulse of the country. They are a real-time indicator. We get data every single day from every single ATM live, and they're really a proxy for human mobility. They're taking the pulse of the economy. They're taking the pulse of the population in that area. And so we're able to draw some pretty accurate conclusions as to what is going on in the country economically. And I think pretty useful. You know, we used to publish many years ago a report called the Spark Cash Index. Mm-hmm. And the reason we reported is because our ATM volumes tracked one of the most closely followed Stats SA reports, the retail trade sales report, really like Train Tracks, except we were able to publish the report, our report, kind of within a week of the new month, and retail trade sales would come out of Stats kind of 6 to 8 weeks later. It was a very closely followed report as a real-time indicator. And so we know the data is very robust and very reliable, and we've seen some fantastic data coming out of the last 6 to 8 weeks, which I wanted to share with you and our viewers today, as to kind of what the impact of the various stages of this virus have been. And as you rightfully said, we think about the stages in a few distinct categories. So there's first the containment phase, which for us was the initial phase from when our first case was identified, I think it was early March, through to the state of emergency, leading up to the first phase of the first 5-week lockdown, which started on the 26th of March. Then we think about that first lockdown period, you know, ultimate lockdown 101, 26th of March for 5 weeks up until the 1st of May, you know, and the impact on our economy and the impact on ATM volumes during that period. And then now the relaxation period that we're currently in. So the move to level 4 on the 1st of May, we've had about 11 days of that. The impact and the improvement or not in various sectors there. And then I guess we'll move through the various phases of relaxation, hopefully moving to level 3, rumor has it, within the next week. Level 2, nice. Level 1. Well, I heard some fairly accurate rumors this morning. I know you're a big proponent of getting out of this fairly quickly, but yeah, I heard some fairly accurate rumors this morning.
I saw the police minister was making some remarks yesterday in KZN saying that the government is looking at relaxation to level 3, but no time frames were given. But I hope your sources are accurate, because
yeah. Again, I'm not going to pretend to be a politician or an economist, but we had some pretty accurate feedback this morning. So hopefully there'll be this continued relaxation, and then I guess we all need to start thinking about the new normal and what that looks like, you know, the other side of this. So, you know, with your permission, maybe to kind of do a bit of a drive through of what we've seen and over the last 6 or so weeks, and then we can, you know, dissect some of the data.
Please do. I imagine that, Mark, there was a big jump in economic activity just prior to the enforcement of the level 5 lockdown.
100%.
People were scrambling to buy essential services and stock up on alcohol and all that stuff.
Spot on. So I'm just kind of looking off to the left here at my charts and the data here and various graphs that our data analytics team are pushing out on a daily basis. But absolutely. So the 25th and 26th of March, which were the Wednesday and Thursday, we went into lockdown at midnight on the Thursday night, and then started on the 27th. That Wednesday and Thursday were real bumper days on ATM transactions. Remember, all of our stores were still open. All of our host sites were still open. No one had closed yet. And it was a real bumper period, comparable in our volumes to a pre-Christmas period. So the most comparable days to that are the 23rd and 24th of December last year. They look exactly the same in terms of the volumes and the spike. The other interesting piece from those 2 days was the average withdrawal value also spiked. So not only was there higher volumes, but the average value that people were withdrawing was also higher by some 15% over our kind of long-term 12-month average, which indicates that people were really stocking up this concept of a flight to safety, a flight to cash. Uncertain times are coming, and you know, we're not sure what's going to happen to the banking system. We're not sure what's going to happen to credit. I'm not sure if my card is still going to be good to go. These are not valid concerns. We have an incredibly robust financial system in South Africa, amongst the best in the world. But these are the concerns that drive people to go and stock up on cash, stock up on more cash, certainly to go and shop more across the spectrum.
Yeah,
you asked about LSA. Yeah, go for it.
Sorry, Mark. We see a lot of irrational behavior when this sort of thing happens. I mean, the fact that people were stockpiling toilet paper ahead of the lockdown is a good example
of that. What's that about? Absolutely. What's that about? If only we'd known how long this would last, we wouldn't have been stockpiling toilet paper. We'd be stockpiling Johnny Walker Black.
Exactly.
So Duncan, that was the period leading up to the lockdown, and then certainly the lockdown came, and the 27th, 28th were some of the quietest days in our volumes. Actually, the Sunday, the 29th of March, was the lowest transaction level we've seen in our business in almost 4 years.
Wow.
We actually went back to our systems to check if everything was kosher, because we just haven't seen volumes like that since I think it was comparable with Christmas Day kind of 2017. Which was also just a very quiet day, just indicative of how people were just staying home and economic activity dried up.
Yeah.
And then we entered kind of lockdown really in earnestly. And then the Monday, the 30th of March came, and we looked at each other because the volumes were still so incredibly low. You know, all the stores now had closed. People had gone inside. People still had enough supplies from their stock up period and hadn't gone off to the shops for a reload. And then we saw what we like to call kind of from the 1st of April onwards, we call it affectionately a month of Sundays, because every single day looked like a Sunday. And what I mean by that is the actual shape of a daily transaction graph. Mm. Each day in our world has a slightly different shape. So weekdays have a kind of a morning build up and then a midday kind of initial peak, bit of a mid-afternoon plateau, and then there's the ultimate peak around 5 p.m. when commuters kind of head home, shopping is done, and then there's the South African fall-off kind of 6, 7 p.m. when everyone heads home and locks up for the night. And that's kind of a weekday graph. Saturdays and Sundays are quite different, with an initial peak around 11 a.m. and then and no afternoon peak, and then an afternoon, just a tail off in the afternoon. And every day through April just looked like that. There was no afternoon peak, and there was just a tail off. So it looked and behaved like a Sunday.
Was it Morrissey or the Smiths who wrote a song called Every Day is Like Sunday? I'm trying to remember back, but could be your motto for that month.
Absolutely.
Mark, did you then see a gradual increase as lockdown level 5 progressed, as people became more comfortable with going out?
It really didn't. I mean, April was a startling month. A minor spike around 15th when we see a government payday. Another small spike around the end of April, just adjusting the screen here, 25th of April. But it really potted around the bottom, Duncan, for the whole of April. And so it went. As a whole in April, and I'll just give you some global stats here, and I'll use as a baseline our Q1 average, which was our Jan, Feb, and March average, largely pre-lockdown, besides for kind of 3 days at the end of March. So using a Q1 baseline, April was just shy of 40% down in terms of volumes on that Q1 baseline. The 40% of the volumes in our ATM network disappeared. 25% of our ATMs were closed through April. So the bars, the pubs, liquor stores, hospitality, casinos, gaming venues closed. So a good quarter of our sites were closed, and they actually remain closed in level 4 because there's been no loosening up of those particular types of stores or retailers. So effectively, we saw a 40% drop off in the month of April. Interesting, if you start splitting that out sector by sector, which I think tells the different stories of essential services versus the rest. So if I look at the numbers, kind of retail did 67% of its baseline in April, petroleum 65%, butcheries 66%, pharmacy 65%, all essential services, all open through April, all relatively busy. These stats are consistent with what we're getting from SPAR and from our pharmacy chain groups that we partner with. Liquor and entertainment went through the floor and did almost zero.
Almost zero. You mean there were some?
There were a few out the back.
Right.
Yeah. there's the front door and then there's the back door. And that's domestic volumes. When we look at our international volumes, it really, as expected, has been an absolute horror show. So we've got about 200-300 of our sites that are heavy international sites across the country, talking ATMs in hotels, airports, tourist locations, V&A waterfront, Sandton's and Schlange areas, to be, you know, around the Kruger Park where tourists tend to flock. Those volumes literally disappeared through the month of April to almost naught. It's almost as if Cyril told the foreigners to please leave the country, which he did.
Yes.
Which he actually did. So that's the story across the different sectors through April. Interestingly, if we slice it provincially and we look at our 60% average across the country domestically, 8 out of our 9 provinces did within a percent of that. So Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Gauteng, KZN all did within a percent of 60%, either up or down. There was one outlier to that across the country, which was the Western Cape, which did significantly less than 60%.
Why was that?
55. We attribute that to the overweight tourist sector in the Western Cape. So it actually felt the pain of the tourism drop in our volumes the most of any market in South Africa.
Interesting.
And I think it's reasonable to look at, you know, the international volumes comprise the biggest percentage of any province for us in the Western Cape. So, mm-hmm. So that was an interesting takeaway.
Yeah. So Mark, what's happened since the 1st of May when we went to lockdown level 4?
I think there is good news, and I think part of our story today is to say that we, you know, April in our opinion was as bad as it's going to get for the South African economy. It was rock bottom. And I think anyone in business will concur with that. Certainly if you're still closed and haven't been allowed to open up in level 4, it would still be pretty much a rock bottom for you. But we've seen a dramatic improvement since the 1st of May, both in mobility of people, but also in activity at stores. If we look at the period from the 1st of May through yesterday, the 11 days that have passed in level 4, we've seen a clawing back of the drop of about half of the drop in April. So about 20% of the 40% drop that we saw in April, we've managed to claw back. And that's just from the sites, Duncan, that are still open. Remember the sites that were closed. The sites that were closed in level 5 remain closed in level 4. We still only have 75% of our sites still trading. Mm-hmm. So it's a material improvement. And I think the message there is that we're robust. We will recover. The ATMs are very real-time, very accurate bearings on what's happening in the economy and people's mobility. I think you just have to compare the roads and the suburban roads kind of end of April to early May to just acknowledge that there is an improvement in mobility and transaction and economic activity. And I think this will continue to improve as we move through levels 3 and level 2. Certainly for us, as we see the liquor stores and other stores starting to reopen, we've already seen a few hardware stores opening this week that were closed in level 5. A few of the shopping centers in general are becoming a bit more active because you've got the clothing stores reopening, the sportsman's warehouses reopening. So, you know, going from just the supermarket and the pharmacy open in the shopping center to now having, you know, maybe half or more of the shopping center open, just the volume of activity is slowly improving.
What are your views? And I know you prefaced this discussion by saying that you're not an economist, but have you spoken to any economists? Have you got any sort of view on how the numbers that you're seeing might flow through into GDP going forward?
I've obviously read the GDP reports and the various predictions from the catastrophic 15% through to what Treasury and Saab put out at kind of 6 to 8% range. I think, as with all stats, we'll land somewhere in between, but it certainly is not going to be pretty. It certainly is going to be a horror show, and I mean, we certainly see South Africa entering a long period of recession. You know, certainly Q2, without a doubt Q3, and in all probability, much of Q4. Before we see an improvement in economy kind of later this year. And I think, you know, much like everyone in business, we're hoping and praying that some of the shackles that the economy have been operating under in the last few years are unleashed and some real hard decisions are made so that when our economy ultimately does reopen, we've actually got some exciting new opportunities to come back to across the spectrum, and that the economy is reset, you know, much the same way that the government kind of reshaped the health curve on the 26th of March. Now, in my opinion, now is the time for the government to reshape this economy's trajectory going forward, because, you know, if we miss this opportunity, this golden opportunity and the space that Cyril Ramaphosa has given himself, I'm not sure he'll have another opportunity like this to reset and make the hard decisions. So yeah. hopefully there's a bright future to look forward to. I'm a glass half full person. I spent a few years living in Australia in the early 2000s, came running home back to South Africa to start this business, and have set up here with my wife and family and many friends in a business. So we're long term, very optimistic on the economy, but certainly a difficult few months ahead, Duncan.
Yeah, no, indeed. I think Cyril Ramaphosa is absolutely aware of this opportunity that lies in front of him. But I think the big question will come down to whether he makes the right decisions coming out of this lockdown. Mm-hmm. You mentioned before we started chatting that SASSA, the social grants agency, has made some changes to make payments.
Right.
And you've seen this flowing through into your numbers as well. Take us through that.
No, absolutely. So it's been a fascinating kind of sub story to the ATM volumes in the last 6 weeks. So part of the assistance that the government has provided to South Africans through this period has been through the social grant, through the existing social grant system. Some 16 or 17 million South Africans receive a social grant of one shape or form each month. From the South African government. That's roughly a third of our population. The changes that the government made to the system were kind of much needed and swiftly implemented and actually quite impactful in our opinion. The first change they made is they moved the payment date from the first of the month through to a staggered payment date on the fourth and the sixth of the month. Historically, going back many years, all the social grants were paid on the first. The funds typically cleared the account late or early morning on the last day of the month. So the kind of the 1 April payment would have gone off wee hours of the 30th of March or 31st of March. And on that particular day, we saw massive problems with social distancing because you had your child recipient grant, your child care recipient grant, queuing with your elderly grant recipients, as well as the disabled. And the first has always been a very congested period for retailers who pay out the grants, as well as ATM providers such as ourselves, because much of the ATM grants are accessed via ATMs. So what they did was smart, and something, you know, that we've been calling for in the industry for a long time is they staggered the payments. So this month, on the 4th of March, the old age and disability grants were paid. So you saw on the 4th and the 5th of March, those payments being made into bank accounts and then redeemed at retailers or at ATMs or at the social grant offices. actually not the social grant offices. They were closed on the 4th of this month. And then on the 6th of May, it was the childcare and other social grant recipients. So the first takeaway was we saw a much more orderly process. There were a few glitches in the system. There were some double duplicate payments, and there were some issues with the EFTs, which the social grant agency resolved and continues to resolve. But it was a much more orderly process. It allowed us as ATM providers, myself, as well as the banks and other ATM providers, to drive higher levels of availability in the ATM. When everything was paid on the first, typically, the ATMs would run out of cash by 10, 11 a.m. We'd have to often reload a single ATM twice on the first just to meet the demand of the social grant customers. So it's a far improved process going forward. Number one, it drives social distancing by minimizing the queues. Number two, the government have also increased the value of the social grant. So there's been increases to the main grants at the moment, the elderly, the disabled, and the childcare grant. And just yesterday, Minister Sisulu, who heads up the social grant department, announced that the new special grant, I think it's called the social distress grant, will also be paid out via EFT and in all likelihood also accessed through ATMs. The relief of distress grant, that's what it's called. It's got a bit of a funky name. That is also going to be paid out into EFTs to individuals that are unemployed due to COVID and aren't receiving any of the other grants. And there's an additional 350 Rand a month effective next month. I believe there's already been 80,000 applicants for that particular grant, and we'd expect that number to increase dramatically. So that's kind of the SASSA story. We saw a massive increase in the value of cash being dispensed to social grant recipients now in the May SASSA run. If the stats don't lie, we saw some 43% more cash being dispensed than the social grant cash through Q1. So the government's taking this opportunity just to use ATMs and the social grant system as a means of getting cash into the hands of certainly the most needy at this time. I mean, I think it's one of the only avenues that the government had to actually get cash into these millions and millions of individuals' hands.
So, Mark, you're part of a NASDAQ-listed company. You operate in multiple markets around the world, as you mentioned. And some of those markets, many of those markets, I'd imagine, are further down the line in terms of their lockdowns than South Africa is. Do you have any data from those markets that might give us some predictions about what's going to happen in South Africa as we move to ease our lockdown further?
Yeah, so absolutely keeping a really close eye on the other markets within our Cardtronics group, notably the US, the UK, Canada, Australia, Germany, and Spain. So Spain is probably the most advanced. They went into the lockdown the earliest, and they're probably the most advanced in their relaxation of the lockdown. A lot of the data I've been sharing with you, the sectoral splits and the kind of the data we're seeing through the different phases is data that we're sharing within the group and comparing notes, really useful for us to see countries that are ahead of us by a few weeks, what they're seeing as they come out of this. And it's a proxy for what we can expect to see. If we look at Spain, kind of the way, each market is coming out of this relaxation, if I may say, in a very similar way. I think the scientists, the epidemiologists the world over are consulting the whole time on and refining their approaches to coming out of this and referencing other countries that have come out of the relaxation before us, the likes of China and the like. So everyone's coming out of this in kind of a 3-5 phased approach. We saw Boris Johnson on Sunday evening announce the UK's approach, which is also a 5-phase approach, similar to South Africa. What I particularly liked about the UK's approach and about Spain's approach is that the government was very clear about the timeframes, the expected timeframes in each phase. Mm. So in Spain, for example, there are 4 phases from the 1st of May until the end of June, each lasting 2 weeks, level 4, level 3, level 2, and level 1. And the government expects to have, even tourism and hospitality and air traffic back up by kind of early July. And by doing that, and based on that, they've modeled their virus and their economy. And what basically they're being very clear to the population. They're saying, if you guys abide by the rules at each stage, this is what you can expect. And I think some of the issues and the irritation, dare I say, or frustration we're seeing across many quarters in South Africa today is that we haven't been given a very clear time frame. People don't like uncertainty.
Yeah.
People don't like decisions to be made for them. If the BNB operator in Mpumalanga just knew that by 1 July they would be able to open their doors, they could then go back and start planning their cash flows, their business, their staff, and their relationships with their suppliers and their bankers. Unfortunately, we just don't have that much clarity at the moment, although the initial draft guidelines spoke about two-week periods from level 5 through to level 1. I don't think that that's landed yet, and I think the government would be well-placed here just to give us some clarity as to what the next 2-3 months actually look like. And then I think people will kind of accept it. And generally, I think we've seen pretty good obedience in this country.
Yeah.
And we'll have a clear time frame to get out of this.
No, I think you're absolutely right. There has to be that certainty because it allows business to plan and mitigate against risk and potential losses, et cetera. Helps it to plan in a much, exactly. much greater detail. And I would actually expect that the president's going to make some sort of announcement later this week. He hasn't. I don't think he's made. I don't think he's been on television for about 2 weeks now. And
we haven't heard from. We haven't heard from Cyril for 20 days.
Is it 20 days? Good grief! I didn't realize it was that
it's
long.
It's 20 days today, and absolutely, I think we miss Cyril, and we loved his messages, and they were just very eloquent. Obviously, his Monday newsletters are being voraciously read by everyone. But yeah. I think we certainly should hear from him later this week with a clear message as to where to from here. And I think, you know, again, I'm not an economist, I'm not a scientist, but we've certainly all had to become experts in this virus in the last 2 months. Be that as it may, I think South Africa is doing an extremely, extremely good job. And I don't think we should take our eye off the ball and off the facts. My 10-year-old boy, I'm a pretty bad parent, but my 10-year-old boy comes in every morning and he's just data, you know, he's data for Skrik and he's obsessed with what's going on. And he'll show me how much better we're doing than the Turkeys and the Russias and the Brazils, who quite frankly responded quite late and are now dealing with both an economic and a health absolute crisis. Mm. You know, we have an economic crisis, but at this stage, our health crisis has been well maintained. And I think we all have to acknowledge that they have to be read hand in hand. They're not mutually exclusive. If you ignore the one, the other will overtake you. And if you ignore the other, the you know, if you ignore the virus, the economy will overtake you. So hopefully Cyril will kind of find the sweet spot in the middle, you know, later this week. You know, the other message that I kind of think about often here is the initial lockdown was binary. It was black and white. You know, kind of go into lockdown and just don't leave your house.
Mm.
It was fairly easy to implement, if you will, and it was a fairly short period of time. This relaxation is a game of chess, and it's a complicated matrix across every industry and every sector with five different tiers of activity. You know, I'm happy if the government get this 80% right, and I'm willing to give them a bit of leniency on what they're not going to get right, and obviously they are going to make a few mistakes. But that's, you know, perhaps my view, and you know, happy to give the government the benefit of the doubt as we try to get out of this.
I hope you're right. But as a matter of interest, are you guys essential? Considered an essential service? Have you been operating right through to level 5 and 4?
We have, absolutely. So absolutely critical for us to be allowed to service the machines, cash the machines, repair the machines, and make sure that they're operational through this period when people still need access to cash. Absolutely.
Yeah. Before I let you go, Mark, perhaps a bit of a left field question this, but do you think this crisis is going to have an impact on the way people think about cash? Do you think it might drive people to look for more digital solutions? I'm just thinking of people perhaps not wanting to use the ATM because it could be a vector for the spread of the virus.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So we've dealt with a lot of these issues. I mean, Let me break my answer up into two parts. Kind of the future of cash in general, you know, pre-virus and post-virus, and that's something we've been dealing with in South Africa and globally for many years. And then the second question was really around kind of the cash as a means of transporting or contaminating the virus. So there's kind of two schools of thoughts as to the last point. Early on in this virus, the WHO, one of the spokespeople at the WHO actually came out and said that cash may be a fairly good transmitter of the virus, and then retracted the comments because actually paper and cash was proven to kind of not be a very long surface for the virus to live on. They did a study and they kind of found out that plastic and steel would last for 3 days and cash, it kind of lasts for up to 24 hours.
I was actually thinking more of the keypad on the ATM itself.
Oh, yes, absolutely. No, absolutely. So the problem with cash and the problem with ATMs, despite the fact that paper may not transmit the virus as well as steel or other devices, ATMs are high traffic areas without a doubt. They're high traffic areas. You've got hundreds of people using an ATM potentially a day. So the actual device itself needs to be thoroughly cleaned. And that's something that we, from a hygiene perspective, have really picked up in recent weeks. Every time we visit the machine, they're getting cleans on the keypad and the device and all the buttons, which is something we absolutely have to keep up. There's new research around kind of UV, despite what Trump had to say about UV, UV on surfaces is a very good way of killing viruses. And we're actually looking at some technology now where we, with an ultraviolet device, could potentially kind of clean the viruses on the ATM every 30 seconds. So that's potentially an interesting way forward. But certainly keeping cognizant of the virus in the same way the trolleys are being cleaned at supermarkets every time you come in. These are high traffic zones. So yeah, that's been a challenge to throw into to the rest of the challenges that we see. Cash in general, if I can come back to your first point, cash in general in South Africa, you know, is really performing very well, was performing very well before the virus kicked in. And we expect to recover kind of ground and, you know, by kind of June, July this year, be back to kind of pre-virus levels. Certainly across the lower LSMs in South Africa, cash remains the primary means of payment. Looking at the social grants and looking at the lower LSMs, salaries are drawn, social grants are drawn, the month supplies are shocked and that's kind of the typical ecosystem for cash. That being said, kind of in the 15 years that I've been in this business, we've seen massive changes to the kind of the shape of payments in South Africa. Duncan, when I started in this business, checks were still around. And checks were fairly prolific in South Africa. Credit cards were five times the volume of debit cards. Debit cards were pretty small. Today, checks are pretty much gone. Debit cards are far bigger than credit cards. And you've got a whole bunch of alternate payment mechanisms, the snap scans and the mobile wallets and the likes. But cash has surprisingly held up very strongly in South Africa. Many reasons for it, kind of it's you get 100% of the value, no hidden costs and all that good stuff. But we are seeing cash in many markets around the world really being displaced by new and alternate payment mechanisms. I don't think there's been a period in the world where there's been such a fast proliferation of alternate payment mechanisms, the mobile wallets, the QR codes, the snap scan equivalents. When you check out in the US, I mean, there can be 10 different QR codes at the cashier. You just use with your wallet, the Apple Pay, the Samsung Pays and the likes. So we're seeing it globally at different paces in different markets. And I guess that's the benefit for us being part of a global group. We're able to see how cash is behaving in these other markets. South Africa is still very strong and resilient from a cash perspective. And we certainly see it being around for many years to come.
Great. Well, Mark, it's been a great discussion. We're definitely going to get you back on again at some point, and whether it's a podcast or sharing some further information on how you see the situation recovering as we move through these lockdown cycles, it will be good to chat to you again. Mark Sternberg is MD of Spark ATM Systems. Thanks so much for your time and for talking to Tech Central today.
Thanks, Duncan.